Yesterday's decision by a federal judge in Pennsylvania to ban intelligent design from public school biology classes comes 80 years after another controversial court case on evolution. In July 1925, the trial of Tennessee high school teacher John Scopes became a national sensation. Three-time Democratic presidential nominee candidate William Jennings Bryan signed up with the prosecution. The great defense attorney Clarence Darrow represented Scopes, and the press gallery included H.L. Mencken. You may remember them better as Frederick March, Spencer Tracy, and Gene Kelly from the Hollywood version of the play Inherit the Wind. University of Georgia professor Edmund Larson wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning book about the real trial called Summer of the Gods, and he joins us now from the studios of member station WUGA in Athens, Georgia. And Professor Larson, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
And I wanted to ask you about some of the similarities between these two trials and some of the differences, and there I guess we have to begin with the verdict.
The verdict was different. In the Scopes trial, John Scopes was convicted, and ultimately the law in Tennessee banning the teaching of evolution was upheld, where in contrast, of course, in Dover yesterday, the judge struck down restrictions on the teaching of evolution. So in that way, there's a 180-degree difference.
A lot of people thought after the Scopes trial that the scientific basis of evolution had been more or less established, and that this was going to overtake the urge towards the opposition to teaching of the evolution. But that law that barred the teaching evolution stayed on the books until, what, 1967?
It stayed on the books till then, and similar laws stayed on the books until the United States Supreme Court struck them down in 1968. So they stayed around for a long time.
So the impulse of these two trials, though, was very, very different.
These trials were different in some ways. There are, of course, some sort of striking similarities in other ways, but the main difference was, and you captured it with your introduction so well, mm-hmm. that event in 1925 was a show trial. It brought together two of the most famous orators in America, and the whole nation watched. It was front page news every day. It was first broadcast trial, broadcast over the radio. It was filmed. Everybody watched the event as these two great speakers, William Jennings Bryan and Clarence Darrow, battled over science versus religion, over the issues of public control over evolution versus expert science. That sort of clash captured the nation's attention. This one, in contrast, the trial up in Dover, was much more a lawyer's trial, much more a trial that, while people watched, it wasn't aimed at the general public. More, it was aimed at a legal resolution of a particular issue.
Mm-hmm. And in Dover, the judge heard extensive testimony from those who support intelligent design and from those who oppose it about the scientific arguments involved. He heard a lot of testimony. That was not allowed into the courtroom or into the court after it was moved outside there in that famous trial in Dayton, Tennessee, all those years ago.
Another major difference, you're correct. Here, in Dover, the scientists from both sides were invited and given extensive time. The trial took over six weeks. While in contrast, in Dayton, all those arguments were precluded, and it really ended up being almost a platform for Darrow and Bryan and the other lawyers to speak to the public on these issues over the radio and through the media, rather than a time for scientists to debate the pros and cons of evolution and in this case, intelligent design.
Until your book came out, I guess the most a lot of us knew about the trial was the movie Inherit the Wind, and there's that famous scene where Clarence Darrow, or Spencer Tracy, calls Frederick March or William Jennings Bryan to the stand to testify as an expert on the Bible because all of his scientific witnesses had been excluded by the judge. Did that happen?
Yes, it did. The defense did bring down, Scopes' defense did bring down expert witnesses from the major universities. Those were excluded on the grounds that we're not trying the wisdom of the law, we're just trying whether Scopes violated it. And then Darrow tried a stunt. He had carefully prepared it for weeks because he thought this might be what happened. He baited Bryan repeatedly during the trial, challenges intelligence, challenged the law, and then pulled this wonderful stunt at the end. Wonderful, that is, if you're Clarence Darrow. And he called Bryan to the stand to say, all right, you support this law. Indeed, you were the ones that came and got it passed, because Brian hadn't just come for the trial. He'd come and campaigned for the passage of the law in speeches before the state legislature. And now tell us what it means, and let's test this law, because what's on trial here is not one person. What's on trial here is your law. And Brian vainly, meaning that in two ways, vainly accepted the challenge, and the result became both history and legend.
We're talking about two evolution trials, one 80 years ago in Dayton, Tennessee, the other which wrapped up yesterday in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We're talking with Edward Larson, author of Summer for the Gods, The Scopes Trial and America's Continuing Debate Over Science and Religion. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And at least in the movie version of that cross-examination, there's that famous line where William Jennings Bryan replies that I'm more interested in the Rock of Ages than I am in the Age of Rocks. I'm not sure that was an exact quote.
It is pretty close to an exact quote. That's the level that the debate descended on. Where it was different is it was much more stereotyped view in the play. Darrow was a little more sophisticated. Brian was much more sophisticated in his replies. But that line was said. A few other zingers were also thrown in. But, you know, when it was all over and the public in the movie and the play rallied to Clarence Darrow's side, and Scopes asked if he won, he said, well, you did make a fool of a bad law, so then it's over. And Darrow replies prophetically, as it turns out, something like this is never really over.
Well, in the case of Dayton, Tennessee, all those years ago, William Jennings Bryan, after testifying in stifling summer heat over a grueling day, dies 5 years, 5 days afterwards in Dayton, Ohio. That's, of course, the end of him. But, of course, Darrow was right. The argument never does go away. What do you think we're going to remember from this trial in Pennsylvania 80 years from now?
This trial is nested in unlike the Scopes trial, which all by itself and these great visible orators and became a legend, this trial is nested in a bunch of other trials. There's a trial in Cobb County. There was one recently in Louisiana. There's the issues in Kansas and issues in Ohio. And it's going to become part of that medley. Also, this particular trial never became the national sensation by itself. What I think is going to last about this trial is this judge's long and careful opinion, which is now not really directed to the general public, but the way I read it, it was written for school board attorneys, and school boards around the country are going to be looking for guidance from that opinion. And so its impact will be the impact that the decision has on those individual school boards in trying to figure out what they can do to respond to public concerns and public complaints that they get from parents and others about teaching evolution in their schools.
And, of course, they get it from both sides.
Oh, they very much get it from both sides, and this is going to be strong ammunition for the evolution side. And it'll be a major factor in shaping the next stage of the battle. But there are other trials pending. There was an argument just last week in the Cobb County decision, which involved textbook stickers that said evolution is only a theory. Mm-hmm. There was a circuit court argument just last week, and we don't know how that decision is going to come down, and that will be a player too.
And you talked about this decision really being directed at attorneys for school boards. There are also members of school boards. They may have drawn their lesson from the election in November in Pennsylvania.
That's true. Another good observation. This town, which was a heavily Republican town, after this ordeal, after being put through this ordeal, they threw out every single member of the school board who had supported this, who was up for office, a clean sweep, and replaced them with people on the other side. And in addition, while this is not a partisan issue, notice that those were Republican voters who did that. Also, the judge who wrote this powerful decision, this judge was appointed by the current President Bush. And so it wasn't a Democratic activist judge. This was a judge who claims to be the furthest thing from an activist judge. Mm-hmm. He claims to be a conservative Republican.
And the interesting point that he made is not that intelligent design is right or wrong. He said, in fact, it might very well be right. It just isn't science.
That's the lesson that goes to that he is trying to portray from this, that science makes certain claims. Science is a certain way of looking at the world. It's certain sort of testable, verifiable knowledge, and it should not be taken to speak to the issue of whether or not there is a God or whether or not God is active in nature. That's a different issue. And his opinion speaks to that, and that's what school boards, school board members, and school board attorneys are going to have to deal with as this continues to come up.
Edmund Larson, thank you very much. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Edmund Larson is a professor of history and law at the University of Georgia, author of Summer for the Gods, and he joined us from the studios of member station WUGA in Athens, Georgia. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cownan in Washington.